This week on Capitalism, Race and Democracy, we dedicate our entire program to the struggle for a free Palestine.
Demand that the U.S. government stop any support for Israel, drop all U.S. support, because the U.S. is what makes this possible.
People take to the streets around the world to demand freedom for Palestine.
Zionism is a racist, genocidal ideology. That's the source of this.
Israeli pro-Palestinian activist Miko Peled shares his thoughts on the Zionist mindset.
They're trying to kill all the Palestinians in Gaza, and no one in the West is lifting a finger to stop Israel. We don't have a choice but to attend this banned demonstration, despite the arrests going on.
France and other countries, subservient to the Zionist project, attempt to censor support for Palestine.
I never really thought that I would see and have confirmed pictures of terrorists beheading children.
They took the babies out of the incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
The Gray Zone reveals how atrocity propaganda is manufactured. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm Paulina Vasiliev.
And I'm Freddy Libertad. For some, Saturday, October 7th, 2023, came as a shock. A quote-unquote unprovoked attack on Israel by terrorists from Gaza. For others, the breach of the wall separating the State of Israel from Gaza, a small strip of land packed with over 2 million people already living on the brink of survival and death, was only the latest manifestation of the 75-year-long occupation of Palestine by the Zionist State of Israel.
We begin today's coverage with Miko Peled, an Israeli pro-Palestinian activist. Peled not only served in the Israeli Defense Forces, but his father was an IDF general, and his grandfather a signatory of Israel's Declaration of Independence. Peled is the author of a memoir, The General's Son, The Journey of an Israeli in Palestine. Responding to young supporters of Israel calling for the leveling of Gaza and the indiscriminate killing of Palestinians, Peled shared his insights on the Zionist mindset.
Zionism is a racist, genocidal ideology. That's the source of this. You know, these kids are not bad apples. The government ministers that have been saying this for decades, you know, the movie about Golda Meir just came out, hailing her as some kind of a great hero. She was an ignorant, racist war criminal. And what do you think her ideology was, if it wasn't the same as this? And the people before her, and so on. This is fundamental to Zionism and to Zionist ideology. Otherwise, how could you possibly have over 2 million people dying of thirst half an hour drive from Tel Aviv, where people are, you know, on the beach and partying all day, not to mention how holding music festivals just outside the fence. You know what I mean? You have to be brought up. You have to believe firmly in this genocidal, racist, supremacist ideology to be able to function and to maintain and to live in that kind of a state and that kind and be part of that kind of society. Otherwise, you're an outcast. And there are. We do know that there are a few people who stand up, and they are outcasts. They're completely outcasts. Anybody who stands with Palestinians, particularly in times like this, anybody who stands up against these genocidal tendencies and policies, and you look at the laws, you look at, you know, military operations going back to, you know, all the way to the beginning of the founding of the State of Israel. It's been massacre after massacre after massacre, savagery after savagery. And what's, I think, you know, some kind of a, you know, perhaps poetic justice, that this massive military force that, especially in America, people love to admire, this huge intelligence apparatus, which again, people in America love to admire, one of the only times that it was actually challenged, and it was challenged by a group of guerrilla fighters, not by a regular army, by any stretch of the imagination, it completely collapsed. I mean, the entire system collapsed. The entire intelligence apparatus is collapsed, did not function. The military was nowhere to be found. You know, scores and scores, nobody really knows how many, but certainly more, at least 1,500, if not more, fighters from Gaza glided in, marched in, came by small ships in, and took over entire settlements. Entire kibbutzim have been flattened, have been gone by a small group of dedicated fighters, as this massive army pretends to be one of the greatest armies in the world, at least in their own view. You know, they were tested a couple of times before this, but never quite like this. Israelis have never seen fighting in the streets.
Peled went on to highlight the long reach of Zionist propaganda outside of Israel.
Israel has been at it in terms of the media, you know, for over 100 years. The Zionist movement invested heavily in the very, very early years, not only in connections with the media, but with, you know, culturally and politically and every other way that they could to influence American and Western thinking in general. They didn't only do this in the U.S. And they, like I said, after 100 or so years, you get very good at this. And now you don't really need to convince an American politician to support Israel. It goes without saying, because they learned it in school, and they learned it in church, and they learned it in synagogue, and they learned it in whatever other activities they were part of as they were growing up. And another thing that the Zionists learned very, very early on, particularly in America, is that all politics here is local. So in every city you go to, every mayor gets a trip to Israel funded by whatever, some Zionist organization, every police chief, every member of every city council, even the smallest cities in America, and on and on and on. So they invest heavily in this, and they have been for a very long time. So it goes without saying that you support Israel because that's what they've been taught, that's what they know, that's what they're comfortable with. You know, it was interesting when Ahed Tamimi, if you remember a few years ago, a Palestinian girl with a big blonde hair was arrested, and really there was a lot of press. She really got a lot of press. Both she and her mother kept saying, well, the only reason they care about her is because she looks like them, because she has, you know, pale skin and big blonde hair. So they it's easy for Americans to associate with Israel because they see themselves in them. You know, they see similar things. They see Europeans who are have taken over and, like you said, made the desert bloom and brought civilization, even though none of that is true. In fact, it's very easy to refute factually that Palestine was a thriving country and everything was stolen, everything from money in the banks to produce in the fields to the entire cities that were built, entire institutions that were in place, ports and on and on and on that they stole. But the narrative is very effective, and there's the way that they present the narrative and the way that they invest in making sure that that is the prevailing narrative in the West is very effective. And like I said, after 100 or so years, you get very, very good at this. Now go prove that they're wrong. Now go prove that what they're saying is a lie. You know, it's a much harder task to prove that somebody, what somebody's saying is not true, you know. And so that's why they're ahead of the game in this, in all of this.
And that was Miko Peled, author of The General Son, The Journey of an Israeli in Palestine, appearing on Breakthrough News.
تراثنا الشاهد على وجودنا من هيك لبست الثوب الفلسطيني من حفا جنين جبل النار الى رام الله خليني اشوف الكوفيه البيضة والحمرة خلينا نعليها لفوق بالسما انا هشاه دية العرب الثاني بخص غزة الثاني بهز هزكلي ماتي حرب سجل انا شادية منصور والحطة هويتي من يوم ما خلقت سيدي والشعب مسؤوليتي لك انا تربيت بين الغرب وبين الشرق بين لغتين بين بخيل بين فقير شفت الحياة من الشقتين سنة مثل الكوفية كيف ما لبستوني وين ما شلحتوني بدلني عأصولي فلسطينية من هيك لبسنا الكوفية لأننا وطنية الكوفية كوفية عربية من هيك لبسنا الكوفية هويتنا الأساسية الكوفية كوفية عربية يلا علم كوفية علولي هالكوفية الكوفية كوفية عربية علولي
That was Shadia Mansour, Al Kufiye Arabiye. President Biden did it again. Although Biden has a long history of lying to the public, from claiming bogus academic accolades during his presidential run in the 80s to claiming he was arrested in South Africa in the 70s while trying to visit an imprisoned Nelson Mandela, Biden may have outdone himself when he claimed on October 11th that Hamas had beheaded Israeli babies.
I never really thought that I would see and have confirmed pictures of terrorists beheading children.
The White House subsequently clarified that President Biden had neither seen nor confirmed the existence of any pictures of beheaded children.
Max Blumenthal and Aaron Mate of The Gray Zone discuss how atrocity propaganda is manufactured.
It would seem enough when lots of Israeli civilians are killed for Israel to elicit sympathy. But that's not apparently what Israel wants. That's why it went so far in pushing its propaganda. And it pushed propaganda claiming that 40 babies had been beheaded by Hamas militants. Why? First, to paint Hamas as ISIS, equivalent to ISIS, because ISIS, this Wahhabi Salafi group, deliberately beheaded its captives and upheld them as trophies to frighten its enemies, and just sheer religious fanaticism. Hamas actually embodies a different strain of Sunni Islam and is simply not as fanatical as ISIS and does not have international ambitions to attack abroad. So the point was, they're beheading babies. They're just as bad as ISIS. They threaten everybody. So Netanyahu's office fed this to CNN. He fed it to Joe Biden. He fed it to Tony Blinken and everyone he could. We managed to, it wasn't like hard to identify the source of this burned babies story. Basically, it started with I-24, which is an Israeli state-sponsored English language news network. It's like Israel's RT or Voice of America. And they sent this lady into Kfar Aza, which is the kibbutz that had been briefly taken by Hamas militants. She was on a press tour. Basically, the Israeli military just took everybody in there and said, here's what all the atrocities we saw, report this. And this one soldier was running around saying, we saw babies and old people and women with their heads cut off. But he never produced evidence. And actually, then Nick Robertson at CNN started repeating that. It just shows you how the media works. They never ask for evidence if it supports their objectives, if the narrative supports their objectives. And this woman, this reporter, she got put under some pressure to produce the evidence. So she found the soldier that had been running around telling everyone that, and she interviewed him. His name was David Ben-Zion. I guess in American accent, that would be like David Ben-Zion. And we sort of tracked him down, just looking at his social media presence, and determined that he was a deputy commander of a reserve battalion, Unit 71, but he was also an extremist settler from the settlement next to the Palestinian village of Hawara. And he actually presided over violent riots earlier this year after calling for that village to be wiped off the map, calling it for it to be wiped out. So this is David Ben-Zion. You know, that's him in uniform, but this is him to the left as a settler, as a leader of the Shomron Regional Council of 35 illegal settlements in the West Bank, who presided over these pogroms against Palestinians earlier this year that were actually condemned by the U.S. And so he was the source of this whole story. Not exactly a reliable source. Someone who the Israeli security services consider to be dangerous. And now there he is smiling right after feeding this story to the international press via a state-sponsored Israeli news service that is funded through the Israeli Foreign Ministry, that is basically one hand with Netanyahu's office right now. That actually occurred on the 33rd anniversary of the Kuwaiti incubator's Naira testimony.
Well, so this was back when the first Bush administration was manufacturing consent for invading Iraq. And so they got a relative, either a daughter, I think, of the Kuwaiti ambassador, or a relative of the Kuwaiti ambassador, to come testify before Congress that she had witnessed Iraqi forces ripping babies in Kuwait out of incubators.
My name is Nayira, and I just came out of Kuwait. While I was there, I saw the Iraqi soldiers come into the hospital with guns. They took the babies out of the incubators. took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
That was a classic case of atrocity fabrication to justify committing atrocities.
Exactly. It was cited by George H.W. Bush on national TV as a cause for sending U.S. troops in and initiating Desert Storm operation, the first Gulf War. Nayar's testimony was bought and paid for by the Kuwaiti ambassador through 16 public relations firms. Her testimony was written by Hill & Knowlton, which is a major PR firm in Washington. And it really set the stage for the kind of atrocity propaganda we saw around Syria, with the Syrian white helmets, for example, being created by a PR firm, the Syria campaign, alongside British intelligence, and then feeding stories of chemical attacks in order to trigger the red line, which triggered several US, British, and French military attacks. And those three countries are now in the Eastern Mediterranean. I mean, and then, you know, the whole irony here is you have clear, unadulterated proof of Israel killing masses of babies in the Gaza Strip, but it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's not like anyone's going to say, well, this proves the need to arm the people of Gaza to defend them against this atrocity. No, no. Yeah. It's completely upside down.
Those were the voices of Max Blumenthal and Aaron Mate of The Gray Zone. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Freddy Libertad, along with Polina Vasiliev. Despite ramped-up U.S.-Israeli propaganda efforts, there has been an outpouring of support for the people of Palestine all across the world.
In response, some countries subservient to the Zionist project are attempting to censor support of Palestine by banning rallies and even banning the Palestinian flag. The following report is from Press TV's Rahman Mazahiri in Paris.
Astounding scenes of arrested protesters in Paris following a nationwide ban on all pro-Palestinian demonstrations in what many are calling discrimination and political repression. Police reached into the crowd again and again to arrest any protester who carried a Palestinian flag, a sign of support, or simply for protesting too loudly. Police arrested teenagers, the elderly, the disabled, detained journalists, and finished by kettling hundreds of demonstrators.
We are here to tell President Emmanuel Macron and all the politicians that France has a constitution, and that in this constitution, the people are guaranteed the freedom of assembly. These arrests are a scandal and shame for the so-called birthplace of human rights.
The nationwide ban has already been employed countless times in smaller cities and towns. It's effectively the criminalization of any public support for Palestinians, while pro-Israel protests are permitted.
This attempt to criminalize support for Palestine is only found in Western countries. The rest of the world supports the cause of the Palestinians and their right to live in a free, sovereign, and independent state. The West is still stuck in their colonial mindset.
There has been no condemnation of the one-sided ban on political speech from top Western NGOs, who were also silent for months during the historic and bloody Yellow Vest repression.
France's political, media, and security classes have all openly sided with Israel, mistakenly conflating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, while Paris refuses to condemn the bombardment of civilians and Israel's illegal siege of Gaza.
They're trying to kill all the Palestinians in Gaza, and no one in the West is lifting a finger to stop Israel. We don't have a choice but to attend this banned demonstration, despite the arrests going on.
In 2014, France became the first country ever to ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations.
One of the scores of rallies in support of Palestine took place in San Francisco on Saturday, October 14, 2023, as thousands condemned the bombing and blockade of Gaza. Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer reports.
My name is Wael Bouhesi. I'm here to demonstrate with fellow Palestinian and human beings to ask for the immediate stop for violence and the massacre that is unfolding.
And the United States now is sending an armada, aircraft carrier, the British, the Germans. Why is the United States sending all these troops and military to the Middle East?
Well, I mean, the U.S. have been on the wrong side of this for decades. We know their position. Their position this time around is particularly awful. They are not even asking for de-escalation. They are urging this on, as you just said. They are enabling this. They are not even acknowledging the existence of Palestinian people, let alone civilians.
And the United States has said that they want Egypt to take the people of Gaza. And wouldn't that be another Nakba, moving people out of their own land?
It's interesting you say that. I'm literally a few seconds ago texting with my cousin who is in Deir el-Balah. I lost family yesterday. A cousin, his son, and his granddaughter were murdered in an airstrike. And she said this is another Nakba. In fact, Israeli officials are blatantly and openly saying we are actually committing another Nakba. Forcing 1 million people to evict, or any number of people to evict, is a war crime. This is literally genocide under international law. This cannot stand. The government here can stop this immediately. And they're choosing to escalate.
And the Democrats and Republicans are kind of united for supporting this. What's wrong with the political system in the United States that there's no opposition? It seems like the United Nations did say you should not blockade this. You should not cut off the electricity, the water, the power. I mean, people are going hungry. They don't have water.
Well, this is not new. I mean, I've been here for 30 years. Since the beginning of this conflict, almost, we're talking about 75 years ago, the United States have been unconditionally on the side of Israel, supporting its crimes, supporting its illegal occupation, supporting its blockade, settlements, and the whole bit. We're not surprised. They are, you ask me why, that's because they're beholden to the military-industrial complex. They're beholden to lobbies. There are no morality or principles involved.
It's a business?
It is a business. And unfortunately, people in power right now, the officials, are all on the wrong side of this. They are all urging on this genocide. And none of them is calling for restraint, let alone stopping the violence and ceasefire. They could do this immediately, and they choose not to.
My name is Carol Seligman. I'm here because I'm so furious about what Israel is doing to Palestine.
And what should working people do about this?
They should be out and protest. They should demand that the U.S. government stop any support for Israel, drop all U.S. support, because the U.S. is what makes this possible. They give billions of dollars to Israel.
And the AFL-CIO, the union leadership, are supporting this. What do you think about that?
What a betrayal of working class people. This is a time for solidarity with working people all over the world, and especially now in Palestine, where they're totally under the gun by the capitalist rulers of Israel.
The leadership say that they're Zionist of the AFL-CIO.
Say what?
The leadership say they're Zionist of the AFL-CIO. They're Zionist. What does that mean to you?
That is sick. That means that they don't believe in separation of church and state. They believe in a religious state that excludes non-Jewish religions from the rights of citizenship, of any rights, and even now the right to live. Zionism Zionism is a horrible, reactionary, cruel ideology, and we have to oppose it in all its forms.
My name's Safa. If you pay taxes and you're a United States citizen, then your money is funding genocide. The United States government sends billions of dollars to Israel every single year. So if you pay taxes, even if you don't care about what's happening with Palestine, even if you're you have Jewish friends, Palestinian friends, you should care about this. You should care about the fact that your money is funding to kill people. That's what you should care about.
Why are the Democrats, Republicans supporting this war?
I have no idea. I think they have interest in the Middle East. I mean, you know, we all know that they have completely destroyed the Middle East in the last decade or so because they want oil. They want the resources in the Middle East. There are no weapons of mass destruction. There's none of that. They have made Muslims and Arabs look like terrorists for their own political interests and to get resources from those people. So that is what's happening right now.
My name is E. I'm here today to show solidarity with the people of Palestine and to show them that there's people who are willing to show up and come out in solidarity with them, because it's the least I can do. And yeah, I'm excited that there's a lot of people here today who are standing up.
And the United States is sending Navy, the ships, the weapons. What do you think about also the fact that they're silent about this blockade of Gaza, which the United Nations says is illegal? You can't blockade people who are confined like that.
It's totally abysmal that our state is supporting total genocide. There's no option for the people in Gaza. And we can't sit here while our country moves in such like bloody and murderous ways. And I hope that what we galvanize here could potentially, influence the government and just, show people that it's important and necessary to come out and to talk about these things, that it's not a fringe issue, that, there's thousands of people here today who are gonna make sure that Palestine will be free in solidarity with the people of Palestine.
Those were the voices of people attending a San Francisco rally against the U.S.-sponsored Israeli blockade and attacks on Gaza.
While we listen to tunes made by ignorant fools, Israel blocked the UN from delivering food. They bring in the troops and you won't even glimpse at the news. They make money off the products that we're quick to consume. And it's not simply a question of differing views. Forget emotions, this is facts, what I spit is the truth. Makes no difference if you're a Christian or if you're a Jew. They're just people living in different conditions to you. They still die when you bomb their schools, mosques and hospitals. It's not because of rockets, please God, can you stop this all? I'm not related to the strangers on the TV, but I relate, cause those strangers could have been me. Words could never ever explain the raw tragedy. It's not a war, they're just murdering more rapidly, and we're automatically supporting pure savagery. Imagine how you feel if this was your family.
That was Loki, Long Live Palestine. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Paulina Vasiliev, here with my co-host, Freddy Libertad. Israel has a sad record of not only oppressing the people of Palestine, but along with the U.S., also supporting genocidal governments from Latin America to Africa.
Mehmet Wesabei, president of the General and Industrial Workers Union of South Africa, explains why Israel is itself an apartheid state.
South African working class, and the black working class in particular, relate to the struggle because this is a working class which, within a living memory, lived through apartheid. And this is a reason that we don't need to be lectured by anybody what apartheid is. Now, you don't have to take my words on that one. Let me quote the architect of apartheid in this country, Hendrik Verwoerd, who is a former prime minister who developed the policy of apartheid for the former apartheid government and became a prime minister subsequently and perfected that system in government. He said, Zionism and Israel, like us, is an apartheid state. Now, we can believe all that we have, and we were justified in that, and was evil and all those things and so on. Now, when he tells you that Israel regime is an apartheid state, like a South African apartheid, you have got to take him seriously on that. So this is what he said. And I think that he has no reason to lie about it. And everything that has come from the experiences, the lived experiences, and the accounts of those experiences from the Palestinians, from, you know, the regulation of their movement, the restrictions, you know, the dispossession of their land, and Jewish settlements on the land of Palestinians, the recurrent pogroms against, you know, the Palestinians that, of course, are now being emboldened by even a far-right regime, even by the standards of the Zionist Israeli state and so on. The daily humiliations, I mean, including a desecration of the holy sites of the Palestinian mosques, of the holy sites of Islam, like Al-Aqsa Mosque and all those things and so on. All of this, it shows a colonial contempt as well as a racial contempt and a system of a racial arrogance on the part of the Zionist elite that, of course, they're encouraging that feeling even amongst ordinary Jewish working class people in their relationship with the Palestinian masses.
According to Sebei, Zionist apartheid is even more genocidal than former South African apartheid because, unlike the South African variety, Israel doesn't need Palestinian labor.
But there are qualitative differences in the nature of the state between Israeli state and apartheid state. You see, the apartheid state, regardless of the planning around it, the South African capitalist or capitalism depended on the labor of the black working class. And I don't think that is an approach that actually is being taken by Israeli, you know, imperialism and so on. What Israeli imperialism want to do is to build a settler colonialism, right? And that is a systemic ethnic cleansing of the native population and to replace it, you know, with a settlement of a Jewish labor. And that is a much more dangerous logic, because what lie in the logic of such settler colonialism is actually genocide, right? They do not want or need a Palestinian labor in a way that apartheid regime could not dispense with a black labor. What we are seeing is a system of a systemic displacement and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian masses. And like I said, in that lies a genocidal logic, which unfortunately I've got to say, in the past 2-3 days, that logic has been fully articulated in what Israel is doing in Gaza, which has suffered 16 years of, you know, a very cruel and a brutal siege. But what they have been subjected to now is nothing short of genocide. The bombarding that, when you look at it from the distance, it more looks like, you know, a volcano, a volcanic eruption. But those are bombs that are being held on the houses of ordinary Palestinians and so on. So they are carrying out that logic that I'm saying makes Israeli regime much more dangerous than what we could even have expected of apartheid government.
That was Mametwe Sebei, president of the General and Industrial Workers Union of South Africa, talking about the relationship between Israeli apartheid and the former apartheid regime in South Africa.
México, República Dominica, Tanzania, fuera Yankee de América Latina, franceses, ingleses y holandeses, yo te quiero libre.
¡Palestina! الوضع بدو الرضع صار الوضع بدو الردع لكل السيد بتحرر مستوطن بتلمت لكل مصاب حكيت ألف كان ألف راق بالهدار الإعلام السلاح مطيب فبركو أما لما ألمي يدي برجع الواقع كما
That was Ana Tijoux, Somos Sur, featuring Shadia Mansour. At a recent conference in Berkeley, California, Hatem Bazian spoke to Steve Zeltzer of Pacifica about the current situation regarding Zionism and Palestine. Hatem Bazian is chair and founder of the Islamophobia Research and Documentation Project at the Center for Race and Gender at the University of California, Berkeley.
I think we're experiencing a similar period or phenomena that in the U.S. during the Red Scare and the McCarthyist era. So we have almost a full press on McCarthyism that is being articulated, with Zionism being the brand to be excluded from public debate, and demonization of Palestinians and anyone that is standing or speaking on their behalf. We're witnessing this on college campuses. We're witnessing this in civil society. We're witnessing this among the sports teams, where they're all outdoing themselves by expressing solidarity, not with victims, but in essence, solidarity with pushing ahead for further military actions and violence against the Palestinians in Gaza. So we're literally staring at a genocide, unfolding genocide in Gaza. And the Western world, in all of its leadership at the elite level, are standing behind Zionism and Israel as we speak.
And the United Nations passed a statement saying you having collective punishment on the Palestinian people is illegal. But apparently both the Democrats and Republicans are disregarding that.
I don't hold much hope for the Democrats or the Republicans. They never have seen a war or an atrocity that they have not actually supported the military-industrial complex. We're still trying to account for how many Vietnamese have been killed during the Vietnam War. We don't know the number of those have been killed in Latin America in all the U.S. low-intensity warfare and implementation of the Monroe Doctrine. And we still can't account for the Iraqis and the Afghans that have been killed just in the past 20 years. I think there was a study from Duke University, a team there, that it estimates about 12 million that have perished as a result of the United States war on terrorism, supported both by Democrats and Republicans, by a Democrat president or a Republican president. It went constantly unchallenged. And today we're seeing the same type of press and support coming from Democrats and Republicans to basically give Israel a free hand. And as we heard Senator Lindsey Graham, as well as the U.S. president, is to give complete power for Israel to do what it needs to do, including turning Gaza into a parking lot. And the United States is moving its military assets, its political assets, to give complete cover for a war crime that is unfolding. The United Nations, I don't hold much hope at this point, even though that should be the body that is responsible. It was useless in relations to Iraq. It was useless in relations to Afghanistan. And I would say it's going to, again, fail the Palestinians and fail those who, for us, believe in the vitality of international law and the standards of fairness, justice that should apply to everyone.
The ideology of Zionism
that the Jewish people have a right to a state, even though Palestinians have lived there, other people. The liberal Democrats say we should have a two-state solution, yet the land has been captured. The settlements are all over. They talk about the pogrom against Jews, but there's been a pogrom going on against Palestinians in their villages in the West Bank. This silence by these politicians, Democrats and Republicans, when there was a pogrom going on in Israel prior to this latest development.
Absolutely. I do think what we need is to step back a little bit and say the following, that Zionism and the creation of Israel is a Western project at its core. It comes out of Western epistemology, Western thought, and Western discourse. And as such, for them, in terms of how they see it as a success case, in essence, it comes out of a deep anti-Semitism in relation to the Western world. And by projecting that they are defending Zionism and, in their mind, the Jewish people, they're actually continuing to articulate a deep sense of wanting to implement Western exceptionalism. So it's really about the Western world and how it actually deals with not only Palestinians, but Jews as a community. So how we could actually disentangle this is one of the most important questions in our time at this point, of how to understand the history of Zionism, how to understand the Western world, which still sees itself as exceptional, it still sees itself as at the pinnacle of the racial evolutionary hierarchy, and also it gives it a carte blanche to actually use violence and intervention across the world, and Palestine is one of those places. It's the last settler colonial project to be commissioned by the West. We just need to understand that in order to come into comprehension of what is unfolding.
And there are people who are benefiting from this war, military-industrial complex, the stocks are going up, Ukraine, the encirclement of China. It seems that the capitalists will make money off of this war, and it'll benefit them financially, the military-industrial complex. While in the United States people are homeless, people are hungry, they don't even have health care in this country.
Well, war is business, and the business of war is war. We have a military-industrial complex economy. We have a recycling of funds from the tax base, from our resources, to the military-industrial complex. And these wars, in essence, it's almost a new product in the market. You need a product, but the product is a war, in order to recycle the massive tax base into the military-industrial complex. And this is basically, we account for about 55% of the global trade in arms. Right? The United States is number one. Nobody can actually challenge. We have the largest military budget. I think this past year is $885 billion, more than next 20 countries combined in terms of budget. All that is basically going toward the military-industrial complex as a mass resource base. And we need to understand the utilization of conflicts and almost instigating sometimes the conflicts in order to recycle and shift these resources into the military-industrial complex.
And there also is an attack on public education and faculty members who are opposed to Zionism or critical of Israel, trying to purge them out at many campuses. Rabab al-Dahadi at San Francisco State. The union has supported her, but it seems that this attack on public education, attack on faculty members and students is organized and orchestrated by the Zionists and the Democrats and Republicans.
Well, we need to understand that education reflects in this contemporary period the same type of configuration that we see outside the world. The universities are increasingly acting as if they are a desk in the Department of State and a desk in the Department of Defense. And they understand the critical role played by scholars, by students, by professors who are attempting to actually get but critically analyze what is taking place. Increasingly, the university is a corporate entity. It even speaks of the students as customers and sees the faculty not as contributor in the intellectual, in developing intellectual communities, but actually are salespersons. The product they sell is this, what you call widgets, which is the customers to the students, in order to fulfill a replacement part for the economy. So the state of public education has been completely transformed and transfigured. And that's why the assault increasingly on the few voices. Right, we're talking about few voices, like far, far in between. You're not talking about in the hundreds. We're talking about one or two in each campus at best. This is a best case scenario that the universities are know that they want to silence these voices. So I think this conference today is very critical as part to have this conversation.
And it seems, though, that they're terrified the fact that students, young people, faculty are speaking out around the country and fearful that the young people and students are beginning to speak up and stand up, and that's something that beyond the pale, it seems like, the corporate media.
Well, narrative is very important. We understand the world through narrative, and the narrative of justice is powerful. It cannot be shielded. You cannot hide the sun by putting your finger in front of your face. So the reality is that the justness of what is being experienced by Palestinians, by racial minorities, by blacks, by the global South, cannot be shielded. And that's why it becomes so important. If you cannot argue and shield the sun, so you try to actually remove people from being in front of the sun in this way. And that's what we are experiencing.
And do you think that this is going to grow, this criticism and opposition to not only what Zionism is doing, but also what the U.S. government, Democrats and Republicans together are doing?
Well, that's our hope, but I can't foresee what happens. Our role is to organize and continue to educate and continue to give the alternative point of view with the hope that this collectively can make a difference.
That was Hatem Bazian of UC Berkeley's Center for Race and Gender speaking to Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer. You're listening to Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Paulina Vasiliev, here with Freddy Libertad. Among the many actions across the globe, thousands rallied in Times Square in New York City on Friday the 13th in support of Palestine. Mitchell Cohen of WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York spoke with a former Gaza resident who was present at the rally.
My name is Khalil. I lived most of my life over here in the United States. I've been here since I was 18 years old. Now I'm almost an old man. So basically, I lived almost all my adult life over here. But I was born in Gaza. My parents, however, they were born in 1945, both of them. They weren't born in Palestine, or what they call now Israel. In 1948, they became refugees. They had to move to Gaza. They were forced out with their parents and their relatives. Since then, they've been living in Gaza. Of course, they have kids and grandkids. And during all this time, there have been wars and wars. And of course, you know, in 1967, Israel took over Gaza. And in 2005, they claimed that they would withdraw from Gaza. But in actuality, they didn't, because they still control the border. They control what gets in and what gets out. They control the sky. They control the sea. I don't think this is withdrawal. You did not withdraw if you still control everything, who gets in or gets out.
Have you spoken to your parents in the past couple of days? What's going on there now?
Yes, basically since this last round broke out, I've been trying to speak to them at least once every day. However, I had a hard time to speak to them today, okay? And what happened, I heard in the news about that Israeli threat, that 1.1 million people of the people who live in the north part of Gaza Strip need to move to the south part. Now, I'm not sure what's agenda behind this. Maybe they're trying to push the people from the north to the south, then from south to Egypt. We have all the area vacant and nobody can come back. We're repeating the chapter from 1948. Parents were kicked out once and didn't want to be kicked out again. So finally, I was able to talk to my mother this morning, and what she told me, we're not going to leave our home. We'd rather to die here rather than dying somewhere else. Some of their neighbors left, some of their other neighbors stayed, but for them, they said, we are staying here, we're not going anywhere.
Mitchell Cohen, WBAI Pacifica Radio, New York.
Writer Ahmed Abu Artema, one of the founders of Gaza's mass nonviolent mobilization, the Great March of Return, sent his voice message to the Electronic Intifada by WhatsApp from Gaza on October 14th, 2023.
Israel is claiming that it's targeting Hamas. Israel now isn't targeting Hamas. It's targeting the children, the families. About 50 families completely were wiped out. Hundreds of the victims are children and women. Israel is destroying the houses while the families are sleeping inside. Israel destroyed complete neighborhoods. So don't believe Israel is targeting Hamas. We didn't see until now any important militant target that Israel destroyed it in Gaza. Israel is killing, massacring the families, the innocent people. So please, this is the most important thing now to do, to organize very big protest in all the cities, in all the places, and say enough for this genocide, enough for this massacres that Israel is committing against the children, against the families. Thank you.
That was a message from writer Ahmed Abu Artima in the besieged Gaza Strip.
I'm exhausted. Last night I couldn't sleep, but when I did, I could hear bombs in my dreams. Nightmare situation. How could they be so evil, making mortars out of children and innocent people? We expect the bombs, not knowing where next. Huddle in the corner of my room, trying to protect my little brother as the building shakes like it's possessed, but nothing stronger than the will of the oppressed. I bomb back with my lyrics and rhymes, living the times, trying to break the Palestinian minds. What's hiding in the clouds hanging over my head? My dad risks his life outside to buy bread. The fourth war in my 12th year. At this stage I'm numb, though I haven't feel scared. There's nothing I can do in this case to stay safe. I'm brave, even though this house could be in my grave. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. Mothers mourn, frightened with grief. White sheets covered by his death, lie on the streets. Buildings turn to ash, but my mind is made of steel. So it doesn't take much for me to heal. Won't lose the will to live or lose our minds. My auntie lost her home, so she lost her life. But she is still alive, but traumatized by the bombs that flew in and dropped that night. My sister couldn't sleep, tried to stop her cries. I said it was fireworks, I was telling her lies. Where's the compassion? This is heartless. It's like they want us all living in darkness, cutting off water and electricity for hours. They're knocking towers, but that's not knocking the power that I have in my pen. When I'm writing, I'm unstoppable. The microphone is the only escape possible, 'cause that's the way that I can speak my mind. I wonder how does the fighter pilot sleep at night, knowing he can turn the city upside down all of a sudden, slaughtering families with the push of a button. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation.
That was DJ Abdul, a young Palestinian rapper residing in the U.S., originally from Gaza. And that concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show.
Today's program was produced by the Capitalism, Race, and Democracy Collective with contributions from Steve Zeltzer, Freddy Libertad, and Polina Vasiliev.
You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalismraceanddemocracy.org.
Make sure you also click the subscribe button. Follow us on Twitter at Pacifica CRD.
We've been your hosts, Polina Vasiliev and Freddy Libertad. Thanks for listening.